Today's shir is Masechet Bava Basra, Daf Ayin Zayin. We will begin on Daf Ayin Zayin, Amud Aleph, right atop of the Amud Amar Ameima. In our previous shir, we learned the Machlokes of Rebbe and the Chachamim, perhaps it's even the Machlokes of Reb Nosson and Rebbe. If somebody sells a shtar, as we described it in our previous shir, if somebody sells a receivable to someone else, how is that kinyan affected? The opinion of Rebbe is that mesira, kinyan mesira alone, is adequate. The opinion of the Chachomim is that mesira coupled with a shtar, with a document indicating that this sale was taking place, is what's required. As we discussed briefly in our previous year, why do Chachamim require that there be both Kinyanim? So I saw a number of Pshatim in the Rishonim. One Pshat that we learned this in the previous year, is that if we only had a Kinyan Mesira, it could be argued that the Kinyan was only on the piece of paper that was being transferred. But obviously, that's not what the real intent of the sale is. The real intent of the sale is to transfer the debt. And therefore, coupled with the Mesira, is required a shtar. Other Rishonim suggest, as we have spoken previously, there's a machlokes if the ability to sell shtaris is midaraisa or midrabanan. And there are opinions that say only midrabanan can shtaris be sold. And since shtaris could only be sold midrabanan, Chazal, in order to strengthen this kinyan, required that there be a double kinyan. Both a kinyan mesira plus a kinyan shtar. Another explanation is that because the kinyan mesira in this situation is a weak kinyan, because you're not really transferring something that has intrinsic value, the real kinyan is the kinyan shtar. But the kinyan shtar, as we're going to learn in a moment, it's Hashem, is a weak kinyan. So in order to strengthen that kinyan, Chazal said that together with the kinyan shtar, do a kinyan mesira. And the fourth opinion says actually just the opposite, that the kinyan mesira is the main kinyan, but there are problems with this kinyan mesira, and the way to strengthen the kinyan mesira is by adding to it a kinyan shtar. The nafgamina lahalacha between these different explanations will be relevant to this question that we discussed in our previous year. According to the Chachomim, that both Mesira and Shtar must be done. The question we discussed, is there any specific order in which they must be done? Mesira first, Shtar first. So if we follow the opinion, the second opinion we just cited, that it's only because of this is only a kinyan of the Rabbanon, and therefore the Rabbanon wanted we should do both, then the halacha would be, it doesn't make a difference which you do first, the shtar or the mesira. If, however, we say, as we said yesterday, that first we're doing a mesira on the actual piece of paper, and then the shtar expands it, that it's not just the piece of paper that's being sold, but it's the obligation, then the halacha would be that you have to do first the mesira and then the shtar. Similarly, if the main kinyan is the kinyan mesira, and the shtar is just only to cover up or to strengthen any weaknesses the kinyan mesira has, again, the halacha would be first do kinyan mesira, then do kinyan shtar. But if we follow the last opinion that we just mentioned, that the main kinyan is really the kinyan shtar, just because there are flaws in the kinyan shtar, we strengthen that kinyan by adding to it a kinyan mesira, then the halacha would be that we should first do the kinyan shtar, and then do the kinyan mesira. Says the Gemara, Omar Meimer, so Meimer Paskins, Hilchasa Oisius Niknas from Mesira. This is the Rashbam's Girsa in the Gemara. First we'll learn the Gemara with his Girsa. That we follow the opinion of Rebbe, and Mesira is enough for kinyan shtar to Rebbe, as Rebbe said. Omar Rav Ashi La Meimer, so Rav Ashi asks the Meimer, this that you're telling me the halacha is like Rebbe, is this a Gemara? Is this that we learned? Or Svara? or you're saying it based on logic. Amle, so he says Gemara. This is how we have a tradition in the yeshiva that we should follow the opinion of Rebbe. Amar Rav Ashi, so Rav Ashi comments, Svar Namihu. Not only should you say that we should pass like Rebbe, because that's the tradition that we had, it also makes sense to pass in that way. Four, says the Gemara, Oisyois Milininu. A shtar only represents words, as we keep on repeating. There's nothing intrinsic in a shtar, and therefore, umila b'mila lemiknin. To do a kinyan on something which just represents nothing really tangible, nothing really intrinsic with a shtar, doesn't make any sense. This is the way the Rashbam learns the Gemara. Tosfos has just the opposite girsa in the Gemara. And we'll quickly learn it with Tosfos' girsa. Amar Meima, Amemah says, Hilchasa ain oisius niknas m'sir karebi. But Meima is teaching us, according to Tosfos, that we don't follow Rebbe's opinion. Rather, we follow the opinion of Chachamim, that a kinyan shtar requires both Mesira and shtar. Amalei Rav Ashi l'Meimer. So now Rav Ashi asks a Meimer, this that you paskin, like the Chachamim, Gemara Svara, and the question that Rishonim explained, according to Tosfos, is very nice. We have a rule throughout Shas, Halacha k'Rebbe mechavei roi, v'loi mechavei rov. That if Rebbe is disputing another individual, we follow the opinion of Rebbe. But if Rebbe is disputing a Rabbim, then we follow the opinion of the Rabbim. So here we have Rebbe disputing the Chachamim. And therefore Rav Ashi asks a Meimer, why are you saying that we follow the opinion of the Chachamim? Because they're the Rabbim versus Rebbe. And therefore the Gemara, we have a tradition that we should always follow the opinion of the Rabbim. Or, not just is that the reason that we should paskin like the Chachamim, but Svara. There's a Svara also that tells us that we should paskin like the Chachamim. To which he responded, no, I'm like Gemara. I just noticed because we follow the opinion of the Chachamim when they're arguing with Rebbe. To which Rav Ashi says, it's not just because of that reason we should follow the opinion of Chachamim. Rather, says Rav Ashi, Svara Namihu. It's a Svara that we should paskin like the Rabbanim. The Oisius Mili Ninu, or Mili V'Mili V'Lamiknen, since we're transferring something which is very intangible, doesn't have intrinsic value, we should have to have both Kinyonim. Ask the Gemara, is this true that to transfer something which is just a Shtar, you can't transfer it with a Shtar alone? Ask the Gemara, V'Amar Rabbi Bar Yitzchok, Rabbi Yitzchak taught us in the name of Rav, I'm a Rav, Shnei Shtarsim. I'm going to teach you the halachas regarding two stars, he said. Zuchu besada l'ploini. I have a field that I'm selling to someone else. He isn't here to take ownership of the field. So I asked somebody else to take ownership on his behalf, which certainly he can do, because we have a rule, Zuchu l'adam shloi b'fonav. And I also tell this person, who's taking ownership on behalf of the recipient, kisvulayis ashtar. Write a shtar recording that he is now the owner of this field. So the halach is, choyze b'shtar, ben choyze b'sada. As soon as I made this statement, this person took ownership of the field on behalf of the recipient, and now it's the recipient's. And I can no longer retract that. What I can retract is if the shtar, according to some Rishonim, hasn't yet been written. According to some Rishonim, even if it's been written, but it hasn't yet been delivered to the recipient, I could retract and say, I don't want the shtar delivered. Rabbeinu Gershon says that this halacha, that the shtar could be written, and if certainly if I don't retract on it, it's delivered, is not only in a situation where I actually instructed this person to write a shtar on the recipient's behalf, even if I didn't say anything about the shtar, this person could write a shtar on the recipient's behalf. Only in a situation, as the Gemara teaches us, where even though I said write the shtar, but if the shtar wasn't yet written or wasn't yet delivered, do I have the right to retract on that? So Rishonim asked the obvious question. We just learned the Gemara, that the Gemara is very clear in teaching us that I can't retract on the field belonging to the recipient. That is reality. So if it becomes his, Why should I be able to retract on writing a shtar? It is his field. So why can't he have a shtar indicating so? So there are many answers suggested by the Rishonim. One answer suggested by the Rishonim is that even though I sold or gave this field to this recipient, I don't want it that public. Because if it becomes public, it'll be harder for me to borrow money. Because the bank won't want to lend me money because I no longer have fields that can be put up as collateral. The people will assume that my financial status is in decline. I'm selling or giving away my fields. Usually, as we've learned so many times, the halacha is that there are shibudim created by the sale of the field. But that's only when the sale is recorded in a document. I don't want those shibudim to exist. And therefore I have a right, even though the recipient is the true owner now of this field, to say I don't want him to receive the field. I don't want it to be shtar. Sorry. I don't want it to be shtar. Another pshat that the Rishonim suggests is, as we've learned so many times, it becomes the obligation of the recipient to write, to pay the lawyer's fee for writing the shtar, but he isn't here to instruct the lawyer, so I'm going to be left with the financial obligation of paying for that service, which I'm not interested in assuming. There are, however, other Rishonim that say that there's a special halacha as far as shtaris are concerned. Then every shtar represents a buyer and a receiver, a buyer and a seller, a giver and a receiver. And a shtar could only be written with the consent of both parties. And if both parties aren't prepared to consent, the shtar cannot be written, which is actually the case of our Gemara, where I'm not agreeable to have the shtar written. That's one situation. Another situation is where I instruct somebody to receive this field on behalf of the recipient, but the way I gave my instructions here were very different. Here I said, "Amanas shetichtvu lo shtar." Here says the Gemara, "Choyze bein b'shtar bein mesoda." I could retract them both. And as a machloikus rishonim, how do I understand this Gemara? This case in the Gemara. Some rishonim learn this like any condition that the halacha is, I'm conditioning his receipt of this field based on him having a shtar. And therefore, until the shtar is actually delivered, the condition hasn't been fulfilled, and I can retract. Another pshat is that this is not really a regular tanai. Rather, this is a situation where I'm saying that I want the shtar, that I don't want the field to be given until the shtar is written. And therefore, until the shtar is written, the halacha is that I can retract. What is the nafkamina between these two opinions of the Rishonim? There are two nafkaminas. According to the first pshat that we learned, that this field, the transfer is not complete until he gets the shtar. Even if the shtar were to be written, but I retract before he actually received the shtar, since the condition has not yet been fulfilled, I have every right to retract. According to the first opinion, it just depends on the shtar being written. And once the shtar was written, even though it wasn't actually delivered to the recipient, it's too late for me to retract. Another nafkamina between the two pshatim is that with all the halachas we've learned so many times, Baruch Hashem, hilchas tanoim, that there are very specific rules attached to tanoim, will all the rules of tanoim apply here? According to the first pshat, this is a regular tanoim, and all the halachas of tanoim are applicable. According to other pshat, it's not real tanoim, and therefore all the halachas of tanoim are not applicable. Continues the Gemara. Rav Chiya bar Avin Amar Rav Huna, Shol Shtaris Hein. There are three situations regarding shtaris. Trei Hadamaran. Two situations are the situations that we just learned. Idach, but there's another situation, which refers to such a circumstance. Ukadim Moich of a Kosus Shtar, if the seller went and wrote the Shtar, Kosus Shanina, certainly, if somebody comes in, a buyer of a property comes in and says, I'm buying this property. I intend to buy this property. but he hasn't yet bought it. He hasn't entered into the deal. And he tells a cipher, an Edom, to write and sign a shtar. Can't do that. Who says I'm ever going to sell it to you? But here we're referring to a different situation. Where I'm selling a property. I'm very anxious to sell this property. I'm strapped for the cash. I want to get rid of the property, whatever the circumstances are. And I'm in the middle of negotiating with you, the customer. So I know that let's say we, Baruch Hashem, complete our negotiations and we have a deal. But now we have to start waiting until the papers are drawn up. And I need the money right away. I want to get the deal done. So I am so confident, or even if I'm not so confident, I'm willing to take the risk that I will go to a cipher and say, write the shtar, even though the deal may never happen. The halacha is I could do such a thing. I could write such a shtar. The only one that can lose is me. So if I'm willing to take that risk, fine. Kos v'shtar l'moicher, af apish en l'kech imay. Says Rav Chiya, ki v'shechse b'karka, nikna shtar b'kom makom shehu. As soon as the buyer does an act of chazaka in receiving the field, which we've learned so many times, chazaka is one of the methods through which a field is purchased. The shtar, even though he hasn't taken possession of the shtar, he becomes the owner of the shtar. V'zui sheshaninu, and this actually, says Rav Chiya, is what the Mishnah means, Masechta Kedushin, that says, nechasim she'en le'mechrayis, niknim mechasim she'esh le'mechrayis, bekesem shtar v'chazaka, which is known as Kinyan Agav. Which means that if I'm selling you a piece of property, and kesef, shtar, chazaka, are all legitimate forms of kinyan for karka, the Mishnah says so, Masechta Kedushin, and now, along, or part of this deal, there's also been matatlin being transferred, even though, as we learned yesterday, kesef, shtar, chazaka are not legitimate forms of kinyanim for metatlin. Here, since karka is being transferred, karka is always considered in the chosm shesh l'machrayis, the metatlin, the kinyan on the shtar, the kinyan on the karka will also be a valid kinyan for the metatlin that are being transferred. So the Gemara's question, according to Rashbam, is very simple. Here we're transferring a shtar. And we learned at the beginning of today's shir that it's very difficult to do a kinyan on a shtar. You have to have a very strong kinyan. Because all a shtar represents is mealy. Nothing intrinsic. Nothing tangible. So in order to do a kinyan on a shtar, you have to do a very strong type of kinyan to affect that type of transfer. And here, I'm doing a kinyan on the karka, and that'll be good enough for the shtar. How could that work? Answers the Gemara. The kinyan that he's referring to is the kinyan that we've encountered so many times. It's the kinyan agav. Agav shani. Kinyan agav is a very strong kinyan. Da mateya, transferring of coins. D'loy nikna b'chalipin, a regular kinyan suder would not be effective for the transfer of mateyos. However, Agav Ara Nikna, you can transfer Matbeya through a Kinyan Agav. So what do we see here? That a Kinyan Agav is a very strong Kinyan. Similarly, even though normally, as we said at the beginning of our shiur today, transferring a shtar, you need to do a good Kinyan, because it's only mealy, Kinyan Agav is a good Kinyan. Machlokes Rishayim, if Kinyan Suder is a strong enough Kinyan for the transfer of shtar, because as we just said a number of times, shtar, given its inherent weakness, for a transfer of shtar to be effective, you have to have a strong kinyan. Is a kinyan suder, is a kinyan chalipin, a good enough kinyan? Achlekes v'shaynim. Says the Gemara, where do we have such a precedent that a kinyan agav is a very good kinyan? Says the Gemara, k'adra papa havle trace for alfe zuzi bechazoi. Rapapa had deposited 12,000 zuzi, a lot of money, in someone's home in Chuzoy. And he wanted to get his money. And he wasn't traveling to Bei Chuzoy. So, Rav Shmuel,
as we'll see in a second, was traveling to Chazoy. So, in a simple situation, Rav Papa would ask Rav Shmuel, do me a favor. You're going to Chazoy, go to this person who's holding my money and ask him to give it to you and to bring it back to me. However, there was an inherent problem with such a scenario. The problem with such a scenario is that this person who was traveling, this person who was holding Rav Papa's money would never be agreeable to give Rav Shmuel the money. Because his obligation, the holder of the money's obligation, is to return it to Rav Papa. If he's giving it to Rav Shmuel, until Rav Shmuel actually gives it back to Rav Papa, he's still going to be responsible. And if something Chas V'Shalom were to happen on the way from Chazoy back to Rav Papa, he will be responsible. So he's never going to agree to give it to Rav Shmuel. So here Rav Papa has a dilemma. He's not traveling to Chazoy to pick up his own money. Rav Shmuel is traveling to Chazoy, but Rav Shmuel, the one holding the money, is never going to agree to give him the money. What should he do? So he came to the shir, and he knew what to do. What he did was, he gave Rav Shmuel ownership on part of his house, a sefer debasi, on the threshold of his house. Machlokes rishonim, if to do a kinyan agav, must you clearly identify the property that's being transferred? Or as long as I say I'm giving you part of my house, even though I don't identify exactly which part of my house, it's still going to be a valid kinyan. And now, since Rav Shmuel took ownership of this house with a kinyan agav, would I have a kinyan? Kinyan chazak would have a kinyan. Agav, he also became the owner of the money. Because the money wasn't here, the money wasn't chazoy. So what, and now, the owner of the money, the holder of the money, I'm sorry, the holder of the money will not be disturbed in giving Rav Shmuel the money, because Rav Shmuel is now the owner of that money. So as soon as Rav Shmuel comes and asks for the money, fine, you're the owner of the money, I'm giving back the owner the money, and I have no longer any problem. So we see that ownership of money, which again is also, as the Mefarshim say, not really of intrinsic value. It's not the metal that has the value. It's the coinage, it's the currency that makes it have value. Can be nikna agabesa. And the Gemara says, ki osu nofik la'api atovach. But what happened was, Rav Shmuel now came back with the money, Rav Papa went to greet him halfway. Tovach means in the middle. Why did Rav Papa go out to greet him? So I saw two pshatim in the Mefarshim. One pshat is, Rav Shmuel did Rav Papa a tremendous favor. The Rav Papa didn't have to go by himself all the way to Chazoy to pick up the money. Rav Shmuel picked up the money for him. So he was so happy, he went out to greet him. One pshat I saw. Another pshat that I saw is like this. Rav Papa was starting to get nervous. As we just described, Rav Shmuel became the owner of this money. He didn't want Rav Shmuel to hold on to the money too long, to get too comfortable with that money, and not recognize that it's really Rav Papa's. And therefore, as soon as Rav Papa had the opportunity, he went to get back his money. We learned in the Mishnah that if you sell a ship, not included in the sale is Leimachas Leis Avadim, Leis Matzupvim, Leis Antiki. What is Antiki? Says the Gemara. My Antiki, Amar Papa Iska de Begavo. The cargo that the boat is carrying. And there are two Pshatim in the Rishonim how to understand the Gemara. One Pshat in the Rishonim is, the definition of the word Antiki is cargo on a ship. What the Mishnah is teaching us is that even though the ship is being sold, the cargo on the ship, the antiki, that's the definition of the word antiki, is not included in the sale. That's one pshat in the Rishonim. Another pshat in the Rishonim is that antiki means all cargo. Cargo on the ship and cargo that's not on the ship. The cargo that's not on the ship, that it's not included in the sale, is obvious. Why would I think that cargo that's not on the ship is included in the sale? But the Mishnah is teaching us is that even the cargo that is on the ship is still not included in the sale. And our Mishnah continues teaching us what happens when you sell something what is and isn't included in the sale. Says the Mishnah, Mochas Akroim, if I sell a wagon, Loi Mochas Aprodis. The animals attached to the wagon are not included. Mochas Aprodis, if I sell the animals, Loi Mochas Akroim. The wagon isn't included. Machas etzemet, there's a yoke on the animal. Selling the yoke doesn't mean you sold the animal. Like machas habakar. Machas habakar, and similarly, if you sell the animal, like machas atzemet, that doesn't include the sale of the yoke. Rabbi Yehuda Aimer, Yehuda says, hadam medim. You know how you know what is and isn't included in the sale? The price you pay. Keitzad. Amalai mechalit simcha. Messiah. If I sell to you, could you please sell me your tzemed for 200 zuz? Hay adava yidua. Everybody knows she'enet tzemed b'masayim zuz, that no tzemed is that expensive. It must be that when the tzemed was sold, he included the bakar, because nobody's paying for a yoke, 200 zuz. And therefore the price is indicative of what is and isn't included in the sale. Chamam and Adam Raya will explain soon in the Gemara why, according to Chamam, price that's paid is not necessarily a proof of what was and wasn't included in the sale. Machloikis Rishayim. The Mishnah began with two cases. One was the kroin and the pered, and one was the tzemen and the bakar. Clearly, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is that we could use the price that was paid to indicate if the tzemen and the bakar were in one sale or not. Will Rabbi Yehuda say also that concept of Hadamim Maidian regarding kroin and pered? Most Rishonim say, yeah. Again, it's the same concept. The price indicates what happened here. However, there are Rishonim that suggest that one, that by even by pered and kroin, even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that the price is not indicative. There's a beautiful vart from the Majid Tzereba on this Gemara that says Hadamim Maidian. There's a famous Gemara that says, "B'shloish drachim, there's three ways ha'adam nikar. There's three times you can really see who is the person. B'kisoy, b'kasoy, b'kaisoy. B'kisoy when it comes to spending money. B'kasoy is when he gets angry. Or b'kaisoy when he drinks." Says the Majid Rebbe, "Hadamim maidim. You want to know who the person is? It's hadamim. See how he acts with his money." Says the Gemara, "Tanarach techlifa b'marova kameid rebavua. Machas a crime." Machas produce. Here, in the Mishnah, the Braisa says that if the wagon is sold, included in the sale of the wagon are the animals. Ask the Gemara, Vanan, loy machatanan. Our Mishnah said that if you sell the kroin, the produce are not automatically included. So here we have a contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa. And therefore he asked them, Amalei asmiyei. Should I delete this braisa? Because as we've learned, Baruch Hashem, so many times, Mishnayis are considered more authoritative than braisas. So here, given that we have a situation where the braisa and the Mishnah contradict each other, when the braisa and the Mishnah contradict each other, we should follow the Mishnah and delete the braisa. Amalei loy. There's no reason to delete this braisa. The braisa that says that when you sell the wagon, the animals are automatically included, is it referring to a situation where the animal and the wagons are connected to each other? There, everybody will agree that the sale of the wagon will include the sale of the animals. Our Mishnah, however, is referring to a situation where they're detached from each other. Machloikas Rishonim, regarding the following situation. The animal and the wagons, and the animal and the wagon are connected to each other, but it's not like the Gemara refers to a situation where the sale, where the subject of the sale is the wagon, that we just learned, that the Braisa teaches us that when you sell the wagon, the animals are automatically included. Rather, it's a reverse situation. The animal and the wagon are connected, and you sold the animal. Will the wagon be automatically included in the sale or not? And as I said, it's a machlokes rishonim. So we've continued learning in the Gemara. Machas atzemed, loy machas habakar. The sale of the yoke doesn't automatically include the sale of the animal. Ask the Gemara, hey chidam, exactly what is the circumstance that our Mishnah is referring to? Ilayim adekarlet simda simda ulabaka bakar. Atzemed is called atzemed. Animals are called animals. Pshita, so then the din of the Mishnah is obvious. Simda zavmalei, I only sold you the yoke, bakar, I didn't sell you bakar. Ella,
the correlate nami lebokit simda. There are places that the semed, when saying the word semed, the bokar are included. So then, why is the bokar excluded? If semed means not just the yoke, but it means the animal, so then kulas ovenlei. And why does the Mishnah say that I only sold you the semed, not the bokar? Answers the Gemara. Our Mishnah is referring to a situation. But ask with the karle letzimda tzimda or lebokar bokar. Many people call it semed at semed, and a bokar a bokar. However, ikanam the karle lebokar tzimda. There are those that say that in the word bokar is included semed. Have you discovered? So now we don't know. We have the sale, and the words could be defined in either way. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, what do we do? Hadam medim. The price that was paid should be the indicator what was and wasn't included in the sale. Rabbanan Savi and Adamim Raya. The Adamim is not a Raya. So now the Rishonim debate, what do Rabbanan mean when we say Ein Adamim Raya? There are two ways of understanding the opinion of the Rabbanan. One way of understanding the opinion of the Rabbanan is that the Rabbanan say money is not a Raya. We don't use money at all as a Raya to what was meant here. And since money is not used as a Raya, we say that it Hamaitz Mechaver all of a Raya, and we say that all you get is the Tzemed. That's one way of learning it. Another way of understanding the opinion of the Rabbanan is the Rabbanan say it's a Suffolk. And since it's a Suffolk, we leave everything status quo. What is the Nafkamina between the Rabbanan, between these two opinions of how to understand the opinion of the Rabbanan? Very big Nafkamina. Let's say I paid, as we're going to learn tomorrow, I overpaid. According to the Rabbanan, if we say it's Vadai, that Semed only means Semed, I paid for the Semed. And there's no Shaila. And according to the other opinion, it depends if I paid or didn't pay yet. Furthermore, Rabbi Yehuda says, Hadamim Raya. The price that's paid is the Raya, what was and wasn't included in the sale. And if I overpaid, how much of an overpay, if I paid more than the tzemet is worth, then it's obvious that I didn't just buy the tzemet. How much more did I pay that should be an indicator? Some say it has to be double the price of the tzemet. Other Rishonim say, as soon as I pay more than a sixth of the value what the tzemet should be sold, it's a raya that the buckle was included. Ask the Gemara, V'ein Adam Raya. Fine. The Rabbanan hold that we never use the price as a proof what was and wasn't included in the sale. But still ask the Gemara, Levi Bitl Bakach. I overpaid. There should be a situation if I know. Ask the Gemara, V'chi Teima, if you'll say Bitl Mekach L'Rabbanan Leslahu. And just to frame the Gemara. When we learned Masechta Rav Metzia, we spent a lot of time discussing the halachas of Aino. The halacha of Aino, we learned, is that if you overpay, if you overcharge, or I underpay, we have a situation of a no. The Gemara says there that if this I overpaid less than a sixth, it's nothing. If I overpaid more than a sixth, the sale is completely void. If I overpaid at exactly a sixth, the sale stands, but I have to get the overcharge back, I the buyer. It really goes the other way too, as we discussed at length when we learned the Sechva Metziah. So says Seder Rishonim, the Shita says this very explicitly. The Gemara here is not suggesting Chas V'Shalom that the Rabbanan will hold that you could overcharge. I know it's a din in the Torah. Loisani Isha Samisai. You're not allowed to do that. Here the question here is a different question altogether. The question of the Gemara is, do the V'chi Teim Bitl Mekach Rabbanan Lesley? Perhaps we'll say that Rabbanan never agree that you should pay back. Daveri you did, but you don't have to pay if you're overcharged. That's not true of a lie. But Tanan, Yehuda Omer, Yehuda says, Hamaycha Sefer Torah Behemim Begolos, if you sell a Sefer Torah, or an animal, or a jewel, Ein L'mano, there is no Ano. Why, by these three things, is there a no Ano? And a Sefer Torah, we can't ascribe a price to a Sefer Torah. A Behema also, you may need the animal desperately, and therefore be ready to pay. A jewel, as we learned in Masechta Bava Metzia, let's say I have an earring, and I need a match to this earring. So I need this particular jewel to match up my earring. So the value, there's no specific value. The Paiskim say, similarly, it comes up every year, you can't say a specific value to an esrog. Because an esrog is not a fruit that has a price, that you buy a pound of apples for a dollar. Esrog is based on the look. It's based on what you want in an esrog, and therefore there's no inor, the Paiskim say, by esrogim. Amrloi. Rabbi Yehuda Ma'amach Sartai Behem against Enloi Inor. Amrloi. Lo Amru Elos Elu. Only these items. So we see that Rabbanan agree that if somebody was overcharged, you have to, not just that he did an Aveira, but he gets back his money. So why do the Rabbanan ask the Gemara say, Ein Damim Raya, that the price paid is not an indicator? We see that the Rabbanan hold that if you're overcharged, the whole deal is off. And says, Gemara, my Ein Damim Raya Nam Diktani, David Bittel Mekach. The Rabbanan aren't arguing that the sale is void. Absolutely. If I buy from you a tzemed, and I pay, as the Mishnah said, some sort of exorbitant price, the Mishnah's example was, I paid Masayim Zuz, and nobody, as we explained when we learned the Mishnah, pays 200 Zuz for a tzemed. The Rabbanan will agree that the deal is voided. The Rabbanan will agree that you have to give back the money. Just the Rabbanan say, you don't get the animal. That's one teretz. Bibay Seima, and we mentioned this concept yesterday, Ki am Rabbanan adno abitul mekach, b'kadesh adas toya. Abakadesh en adas toya, loy ema, loy. When did Chazal say that somebody may overcharge? That there's a concept of an or? It's in a place where people can make a mistake. The example I always give is a person like myself that doesn't go shopping. So if I'll go into the store to buy a bottle of milk, so let's say a bottle of milk costs $2. And this storekeeper sees that I don't know the prices, so he'll charge me $2.50. So given that I'm an individual that doesn't know what the price of anything is, except maybe that's what milk costs, and I'll pay $2.50 for it, and that's all I know. But let's say I'll go into the store to buy a bottle of milk. I still don't know the price of anything. But the storekeeper will charge me $20 for a bottle of milk. Everybody knows that a bottle of milk doesn't cost $20. So why'd I give him $20 for a bottle of milk? It must be because I really wanted to give him a gift. That's the same thing in our Mishnah. A tzemed means a tzemed alone. If a tzemed means a tzemed alone, why did I pay 200 zuz? Because I wanted to give the seller a gift. And this was a covetous way of giving him a gift. Em matana yavle, I wanted to give him a gift. Reb Chaim Briska says a very important help, very important part in understanding our Gemara. He says as follows. Our Gemara says that Rabbanan hold Ein Hadamim Raya. He says it's not to be understood that Rabbanan never use price as an indicator. What does it mean? The Gemara we're going to learn discusses a situation where I bought an animal from you. And it turns out that the animal is an animal that's a wild animal that can't be used for working. The only thing you could do with this animal is slaughter it. And I say, no, I wanted to buy an animal for working. I didn't want to buy an animal to slaughter. Says the Gemara that there is no machloikis. Even the Chachamim will agree that how do we pass in this Tentaira? We look at the price that was paid. Because the price for an animal that's going to be used for working is a lot higher than the price that was paid for an animal that's going to be slaughtered. Why? Al-Gamar says, Ein Adam Raya, says Reb Chaim Briska. In that case, there is no question what is being sold and bought. It's an animal. The question is, what type of animal did I mean to buy? An animal for slaughter or an animal for work? Everybody will agree that Domim could be an indicator. Our Mishnah is not talking about that situation. Our Mishnah is referring to a situation where we don't know what's being sold. Was only the semed being sold? Or is also the bucket being sold? So there's not a question about, there's not only a question on the price, there's a question on the what. In the previous case, there's no question on the what. There's a question on what was my purpose. But everybody knew I was buying this animal. Here, we don't know what's included in the sale. Is only the semed included in the sale? Or is the bucket also included in the sale? Theater of Butterhold and Adam Mimraya. Why is this Vart so interesting to me from Rav Chaim. I saw a very interesting shaila. There was a shul. It's a very common shaila. I mean, it's not a common shaila, but it's a common circumstance. Parshas B'shalach has in it the Parshas Haman. And there are many people that believe that getting the aliyah of Parshas Haman, Parshas B'shalach, is a skula for Panasa. So how do you decide who in the shul should get that aliyah? They sell the aliyah. Parshas Haman is Chamishi and Parshas B'shalach. So they were selling Chamishi and Parshas B'shalach. And there was an individual in the shul that wanted that aliyah. And he paid a lot of money for Chamishi. The Gabbai, I have no other word how to describe him, was a wise guy. What did he do? It came to Chamishi. Chamishi was sold. And this person spent a lot of money for it. Got Chamishi. And then, after three psukim, they make all his suffer. And he gives the Parshas, you didn't get yet the Parshas Haman. Parshas Haman is later in the Aliyah. Parshas Haman, another person get. The person who spent all this money comes saying, you cheated me. I'm not going to pay for this. I bought Parshas Haman. I didn't. And the guy says, I'm 100% honest. I sold Chamishi. And I gave you Chamishi. What's the halacha? And here we have a very complicated shaila, because it's a question of nedelet stoka. The money that person promised is a nedelet stoka. And if you'll recall, when we learned Masechta in the Dorim, we discussed that a nedelet stoka is a very serious neder. If you remember, we learned that even though normally a neder is never considered a neder until you clearly articulate it, by stoka, as soon as you think about it, it may be considered a full-fledged neder. What's the din? The question is, based on what Rav Chaim said, what is the definition of the word Chamishi? And what will it depend on? Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein says the psak this way. He says it depends if this is a shul that normally makes a sofis. If it's a shul that normally makes a sofis, Chamishi means the first person that gets an aliyah. And if you were the fifth person that got the aliyah, you got what you paid. If, however, this is a shul that normally doesn't make a sofis, so Chamishi means the whole Chamishi, as it is in the Chumash, divided. And therefore, if you didn't get Parshas Haman, you don't have to pay for it.